CRPS, it's a real bad time. There's no out, there's no light at the end of the tunnel, and things are just getting worse. I remember getting told that how much progress you make in treating it in the first 18 months is probably as good as it's going to get. So feel me when I bring it, sing it loud. I'm from the loop
and I'm proud. Run a mile for the cause. I'm righteous above the law. Play my style. Guys, it's your girl Nahama, your favorite Jew from the Lou. Welcome back to my podcast. And today I'm super excited to have Sam, and we're up to episode 14. And this is the first time that I've had a guest on who I didn't really know previously. So I wanted to share just a quick little introduction about how we know each other.
All right.
So what happened was I had posted my second podcast with JT. And my Instagram following is still so small that every time I get a like of someone who I don't know, I immediately go to their profile and I'm like, who is this person? And I saw your page and I saw that you were an amputee athlete. And I was like, that's so cool. I bet you he has a great story. And then I also saw that we had like a few connections in common. So I was like, okay, I won't come off as just some random stranger. At least I could have like some soft introduction.
You know what? I've had the random stranger thing.
Yeah.
I've been on random stranger podcast as well.
Right. It's true. But you know, in terms of sales, if you could have like a warm call versus a cold call, it's always better.
Yes.
Yeah. So I reached out to you and you were so quick to respond, which I'm so grateful for. And then
just like leave you hanging for like 2 days.
I know.
On like something that's a no-brainer.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was just like, your story's great. I'd love to have you on as a guest. And then I asked if you wanted to meet up for coffee because obviously, like, let's break the ice a little bit and make sure that there's like a good rapport. It's a good story. Mm-hmm. There's something to this.
Work out the kinks or understand what you want to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. And then also what also really impressed me about you as well is we met at a coffee shop, but not only did you come, but you brought your wife, which I thought was so sweet and so gentlemanly because it's like, here you are meeting like a random girl off Instagram, and thought it was really respectful that you brought your wife with you.
I'm going to be honest. I believe it was more logistical.
Really?
If I'm going to be completely honest, I do believe that to be logistical, but yeah, that too.
We're going to go with my story because I like it better. I like to narrate life and according to how I see things. But actually,
that being said, I probably share more of that information with her for that same reason
for sure.
Than she cares to have.
Okay.
She's like, I don't even know why you're telling me this. I was I don't know. I just feel like I'd rather you know it and then find out later.
That's true. But also, I think everything happens for a reason because her story is also so cool that after I met her, I was like, no, you're going to be my next episode. So everything works out for a reason.
Two birds, one stone.
That's right. So let's dive like right into your story and let's talk about how one thing that I thought was super fascinating was you said that like you really didn't have any health issues growing up at all.
Correct.
So why don't you start from the beginning and tell what happened that inevitably caused you to have to amputate your leg?
Yeah, so definitely a very long path to get to the amputation. And the amputation was a very different thing than most. So mm-hmm. September 6th of 2011, I was active duty in the Air Force on the combat control pipeline. I was in a school down in Biloxi, Mississippi, and on a run, freak accident. Clip a curb with my foot, land on the outside of like the front half of my foot, and it rolls my ankle over so bad. Like I specifically remember feeling the inside of my heel roll up and touch my heel, my ankle. So pretty nasty right there. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I can really verbally describe the sensation I had there. I knew something wasn't right, but I'm in this mode. I know what I'm there for. Again, like I said, I'm in a special operations career field, and I do believe I was very right for that job. You get up and go.
Right.
Go and I run another mile. That fall was my last moment, right before impact, was my last moment out of pain for the next 9 years. I developed a nerve condition called complex regional pain syndrome, which is exceedingly unlikely. It's typically preceded by a trauma. In this case, it was the fall and impact. And the chances of me getting that condition was 0.00026%. So by meeting me, you probably aren't going to meet anyone else without it unless you seek it out or somebody sees this and reaches out to you.
Yeah.
It is a very intense condition. Everybody gets it a little bit different. The name is particularly vague and it really describes how little we how little and how poorly we understand it and how to treat it, unfortunately. And my big shining star, or like big characteristic, like some people get very touch sensitive, temperature sensitive, something. Mine was just flat out constant pain. The pain never turned off. I don't remember whenever I'd ever even got, would get it below a 3 on, like, if you're going to go out on the pain chart. And I was regularly, especially after a couple of years, I was regularly, like, on a weekly basis, seeing pain 8, 9, 10. Like, if I were to go to the hospital, there was nothing they could do for me with that pain. Like you said, my wife's here. My wife watched it happen. Like, I would just, there were just nights and evenings where I was completely incapacitated with just pain. Just like, there was nothing I could do for it. There was no, unless I just wanted to get like ketamine. Like, that was the only other, like, do I want to just be on a steady drip of ketamine to infinity?
Yeah.
And that might work.
But there's no guarantees.
No. And that stuff, obviously you'll build a tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole thing that happens when you take opiates indefinitely.
Oh yeah.
So like, I'm trying to avoid that, knowing like, if I want out of this, or if I want to ever find a solution, I don't want to then have to fight an opiate addiction after that.
The fact that you were able to think so rationally while in pain is really amazing, because most people, if they're in that level of pain consistently, they're just like, give me whatever.
It was the only thing I felt I had any control of. Like, mm-hmm. I was 20 years old when this happened. 20? Yeah, I was about to turn. No, I was 21. So I was 21 when this happened.
You were a baby.
Yeah, like, I just went from like, I'm going to be a special operator,
mm-hmm.
military, to have no control in my life except for this. How I handle it is the only control I had. And I had to cling to that. And that's what I saw whenever, like, 'cause there's communities for this. And that's what I was seeing, is that there were so many people that just were so leaned into their diagnosis and how helpless they were. And I was like, no, that's not me. That's not going to be me. I don't know how I'm going to get out of this. I don't know if I'm going to get out of this. But if something ever presents itself as an opportunity, I need to be ready to strike, if you will. And so, like, that was work. And that, you know, I'm now 6, 7 years down the road, and I'm having a hard time walking. Anything that was single leg or had impact became big time problem.
So it was getting progressively worse.
Yes.
As the year was going on.
Yes.
So going back to that first moment, though, when you fell, did you lose consciousness, or was it just a trip? Or
no, there's no loss of consciousness. I didn't hit my head or anything like that. Like, okay. No, it all happened on that foot. But yeah, so like, I end up, now I'm using a cane. Cane's no longer enough. I'm walking around, I'm almost 30 years old, walking around on a forearm crutch. And people are just like, what's your problem? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Because like, I still was, I trained as hard as I could. It wasn't as hard as I wanted, but I trained and lifted. Like, strength was my asset. I didn't get to use it. I couldn't express everything with the nerve issue. So like, if you're only going to get 20%, you have to raise the ceiling. So like, I just kept my head down and focused on that, knowing that, again, that if a solution ever presented itself, I'd be ready to take advantage of it and come out of the gates ready to go, come out hot like I wanted to. I'm on a forearm crutch. We're at the Arnold Sports Festival in Columbus, Ohio. And we're walked by this booth, and this woman, she's an amputee. I kind of look at the booth, and it's called Catch a Lift Fund. She's like, do you mind if I ask? Like, she is one of the, like, a lot of people would ask very rudely, what's your problem? What happened to you? She was like, would you mind to kind of let me know? Like, you're kind of young for that cane. And I was just kind of curious, like, did you serve? She was also a veteran. Okay. She had an injury that led to complex regional pain syndrome in her ankle, and had an amputation that resolved the pain.
Was that the first time you ever had thought about amputation as a possibility?
It was the first time. I mean, don't get me wrong. I thought about, like, I had, before that, I had had the thought, like, if amputation would work, it'd be worth it.
Yeah.
I need this out of my life. Like, you don't fight to keep cancer in your body. And it was, metaphorically a cancer at that point to my life.
Mm-hmm.
So like I had like those thoughts, but this was the first time I ever met someone in person that had it. Ankle, similar sorts of timelines. And so it's a 6-hour drive home from that, from Columbus, Ohio to where we were living. And my wife and I talked about it on the car ride. Like, if it comes to that, how do you feel? Because if she wouldn't have been okay with it, I wouldn't have done it. Because that was part of what I was so desperate to get out of pain for. It's like, I can't, I'm not a husband. There was no chance I could, you know, if there's any possibility of being a dad, an uncle, like I couldn't, I was not active participant in any of this because I was in so much pain. My brain was so clogged up.
Right.
And so we talk about it on the drive home. And really, I would say probably by the time that we were home, we were at minimum like, this might be our reality. This might be our future. And that's okay. Right. Like, yeah. I would say that like we were there. I don't know what the time, I don't know exactly where that was in the timeline. I'd say it was within the last year and a half before. Yeah, it was probably the spring, and then spring of 2019. Yeah, spring of 2019. By December of 2019, I had contacted the VA and said I would like to pursue an amputation. Things had just gotten, there was no life. I couldn't figure it out anymore.
I think just for everyone listening, what's so interesting is that, like, at least before I met you, I had a very, like, ignorant mindset around, like, what causes someone to amputate a limb.
Mm-hmm.
I actually always did associate it with, like, a wartime thing, you know?
Oh, yes.
That's, like, very, very common.
Yeah.
You know?
If you're younger, the balls on some people, man, the way they will just walk up to me, thank you for your service.
Oh, well, without even asking.
They will walk up to me and interrupt my day to say, thank you for your service.
Mm.
And
it's it was service related, but like,
yeah, exactly. They don't mean it to be like, it's not like malicious in intent,
yeah,
but it's also not respectful either.
Right.
It's them fulfilling their own fantasy about who they just met.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so like that's a really common, and like you said, for me, amputation was a solution. It wasn't a byproduct.
Right.
It was me seeking a solution. And that's the unique characteristic of my amputation.
And also it wasn't necessarily, from what you explained to me before, it wasn't necessarily going to be a solution. It was a leap of faith on your end.
It was the last punch I had to throw.
Mm-hmm.
It was truly the last, like there was nothing else left. There was no other treatment, like reasonably that, like I either failed every treatment or we were so far past that we're like, even if this would work, it would work very short term and only take like the edge off.
Mm-hmm.
My goal was to get out of pain. And so, yeah, that's what we were like. I was like, at minimum, I can figure out what life can look like when I know I don't have this one more thing I could have done. That was kind of like, I joined the military. Part of what drove me to join the military was I could not stand being around adults who were like, yeah, if I would have joined the military, I would have been this, I would have been that. I for sure would have been a Ranger. One of the quickest ways for me to lose respect for you than to tell me all about what you would have done if.
No matter what stage of life it is.
Correct. Right. Like, and I was like, and I knew in my brain, my older brother was active duty, he was infantry. He did 3 combat tours, and I remember there was a point before his second one where I was pretty confident. I was like, kind of like, I'm capable of this. I was born in college. Every semester made me feel like what I was doing was not taking me anywhere closer to being happy.
Hmm.
I didn't really know what that meant at the time, especially as, a not very keen to the world 18, 19 year old, but I knew that I was feeling nothing that I wanted to feel about it. And I was like, I don't want to grow up and be that guy who knows he could have.
Right. Well, good for you for taking action for that. Cause I think one of the saddest and like most complicated things about like our society is that you have to almost choose what you want to do for the rest of your life at 18, 19.
It doesn't
go to
work.
College, you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on tuition for something that you may or may not do.
Right? Like it's
insane.
It is nuts. Like, yeah, why isn't a gap year a standard?
It should be. Like, you know, but at least you listen to your inner voice and you follow that to be like, okay, I don't know if this is the right move, but I know where I'm at isn't doing it for me.
One of them is going to cost me a bunch of money no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one might cost me a leg. It did. You know, it might cost
you
me.
Did you really have that even thought going into it?
No. I'm like, I can pay to be here or I can get paid really poorly to be over there and feel like I'm actually working towards or figure something out.
Yeah.
No matter what. Even if I want to go back to this, I can go to school while I was active duty. And I've got a resume item, especially back because I was in, like my freshman year of college was 2008.
Mm-hmm.
All the economic stuff was going on. And you sit there and like everyone's struggling to get a job out of college. So they were just staying in college.
Oh, interesting.
So like people started getting masters. So nobody can get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Like this degree that you've been promised guarantees you a happy life is like guaranteeing you unemployment almost. So like people are like, well, if I can't find a job, I'll just stay in school because I don't have to deal with my student loans if I stay in school.
But you're just accruing more student loans.
Correct.
Wow.
Well, it was everybody had this idea of like, well, the bachelor's doesn't guarantee me a job. This master's, this whatever was going And I definitely didn't jive with that.
Yeah. Someone who's on the other side, if you're still in school, I can just tell you experience is what gets you jobs.
Correct.
You kind of just have to start at the bottom.
So for me, I was like, well, at minimum, this is going to be a resume item that people love to overvalue.
Mm-hmm.
Like I did know that going in. I was like,
you'll represent.
People will overvalue military service and think it means something that it doesn't.
Right.
I met some of the best people I've ever known. I've also met some of the least capable people I've ever known in the military. Like everyone joins. It's not like the bar to get in is not up here.
Right.
And that's fine. But like, but I knew that I was like, okay, at minimum, I can go back to this and I have this resume item that can get me interviews, that can get me something to talk about in interviews that isn't that time at college.
The golden ticket.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So like to me, it was the intelligent choice. It's sad, but like mostly more than anything, I was trying to feel something. And that's what led me that direction.
Yeah. What's crazy is your experience like reminds me a lot of when I was talking to JT too, where it's like anyone who listens to your story would not want to go through it. I don't think you would want anyone to go through it. But at the same time, the experiences and the people that you've met, the growth that you've had internally, that's something that's like so powerful and so unique that in a certain way
there's nothing to trade, nothing I'd be willing to trade about it. Like
yeah.
The reality is leaving Mizzou, University of Missouri, to join the military was the first time I truly put both hands on the steering wheel of my life.
Right.
And that is the most important thing that you can do.
Well, going back to how you were saying how over the course after the accident had happened, what I really thought was really interesting in our conversation when we had over coffee, you said that it was called the suicide disease.
Yes.
Which I think is insane. But can you elaborate on that a little more?
Really simple.
Yeah.
CRPS, it's a real bad time. There's no out. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. And things are just getting worse. I remember getting told that how much progress you make in treating it in the first 18 months is probably as good as it's going to get.
Oh, wow.
Like you're either going to, your body's going to accept the treatment and it's going to work and it's going to help you and you're going to have a mild case or something like that. I don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that 18 month window, the effectiveness of the treatments falls off the table statistically.
So were you somewhat hopeful those first 18 months? Like, oh, maybe.
I didn't understand what was going on still.
Okay.
I'm going to be honest. Like, I really didn't understand. I spent the first 6-7 months thinking I'm going to get back in. I'm going to get back into the pipeline. Because most people don't even get a diagnosis as fast as I did. Mm. It's very difficult to diagnose. I was being treated for an ankle sprain for 6 months.
Wait, so how did they figure it out in the end?
Wonderful military medicine story here. For 6 months, I was being given the exact same physical therapy program for an ankle sprain because I did sprain my ankle. I fractured the tibia, no, fractured the fib. Real bad ankle sprain, and so you have to like you write down your pain level with it. And my pain was still like way up, and I'd gotten pulled in. Say, we think you're lying. They didn't say it exactly like that, but the word lying was used,
Whoa.
suggesting that I was lying about my pain to try to get out. I was like, I was in a complete volunteer position,
Yeah.
doing special operations. Like it's, I don't know what it's called. People like to get excited about it, but it's like a double or triple volunteer sort of thing. I had the option to get out at any time because of my career path that I chose out of basic training. I could have said, "Hey, I'm done. I want to separate," and I was allowed to get out. And like, so why would I?
Right. And meanwhile, you're in excruciating pain and you
Correct.
don't know what's going on.
But to them, they think I've got an ankle sprain and these pain levels don't make sense. Why aren't they going down?
Wow.
Someone was like, "Let's send him to the pain management clinic." I want to rule something out. He was wanting to rule out CRPS.
Wow.
The pain management doctor did a couple of like just like looked over the notes, did a couple tests that talked to me a little bit, and I'll never forget him just looking like just it was the most sincere interaction I had with military medicine. And he goes like he's like, "This is the most clear-cut case of CRPS I've ever seen, and I'm really sorry." I didn't even know what that was. They assumed that I was already getting medically retired. And here I'm this 21, 22-year-old kid now is thinking, no, I'm a hard charger. I'm getting back in.
Yeah.
I broke my femur. I fractured my femur in my selection course, healed that and finished my selection course on a broken femur. What's an ankle going to do to me? Like I had a lot of confidence in my ability to get back. And now this happens. So I don't understand it. I try to research it and it becomes more confusing. It really wasn't until like the darker times of it all, of the pain didn't come until a little bit later because I did spend a lot of time in denial, and it was more the social impact of everything that was happening with the pain. And so like these things happen with all chronic pain issues. You start to become less social or like why would I go on a vacation? Why would I go on a trip? Why would I go out to a bar like, that all the people my age are doing? I'm just going to be miserable. So you start either asking to do different things or you cancel plans and then you stop getting calls and nobody's people stop answering. And like one of the things with chronic pain is whether people mean to or not, you get treated very poorly on top of your pain because people, especially for like me, because nothing was visible.
They don't understand it.
They don't understand.
Right.
There's a Kid Cudi lyric that I am so huge Kid Cudi fan musically. Like he's got this song called Ghost. On the second Man on the Moon, and it ends with him just repeating this lyric. I hope they understand that I really understand that they don't understand. I had to really cling to that because people didn't understand, and they thought that I was just this jerk, this asshole, this crotchety 90-year-old in a 25-year-old's body.
So meanwhile, not only are you going through all this pain, but you have to forgive people for not understanding
I
and
am
how they
getting
handle
I'm
you.
getting isolated. I'm getting left behind, like I don't have any relationships from pre-military. I was inconvenient, really, because I was inconvenient. 25-year-olds don't deal with that well.
Right.
So now I'm basically just like alone. And again, this is the cycle that happens to a lot of people with chronic pain, and with ones that are this intense, people they don't die to natural causes. They don't get that far. Substance abuse related thing. Complications, conditions, or just flat out mental health deterioration typically does end in suicide. Like, and that is 1,000% where I was headed. I had gotten to the point where I could not objectively figure out what I was living for with my life. I couldn't stand what I was doing to my wife. Like, this can't be her life. This is not okay for her. And while I know that she loves me, like, I don't like this is not fair. And this is not what she should be doing. And so, like, I understand it. I was there. I was on that line. That's why that call got made for the amputation, because, like, I have to get this gone. And that's why this condition is called that. That's why it has that moniker. I mean, I've heard that terminology used in a clinical setting.
So have you, how long has it been since you've had the surgery?
Just over 3 years.
Just over 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, even though you had the surgery, it wasn't just like a smooth transition to like everything's great now. It's like you just lost a limb. Yeah, granted, you're not having this pain, but now you're having to learn how to use your body differently, train differently. What was that like?
That was exciting. It
Yeah.
was out of pain.
Yeah.
I woke up out of pain. Like it really wasn't like, yeah, there were challenges, but I wanted them. Like all I ever wanted was for my work to add up to something. And I'd spent the last 9 years of my life working very hard for no progress, very much Sisyphus rolling the rock up the hill just to start back at the bottom the next day. And I was just thrilled. I was thrilled to get to solve a new problem.
Where there's the opportunity to just
There
get better.
opportunity is the right word. I finally had opportunity in my life. My work added up to something. Like the math was finally going to start adding up for me. And again, challenge, yes, but I just decided to get really interested in it. Like I got to use everything, all the determination, all the grit, all the habits, all the like just learning to control what you can control that I had to, that kept me alive in those 9 years. I still do it all. I do all the same things. Now they propel me forward instead of keeping me out of like that pit of despair.
So you transition from the survival mode to thriving,
Correct.
which is awesome.
Which through the same sorts of tenets and foundational core being.
Well, it's so interesting you the way you just phrased it. I literally just this morning when I was working out, sometimes I like get into these deep thoughts while I'm listening to a podcast while I'm working out. And I noticed, I was thinking about how like in order to be successful, you do have to be really, really interested in whatever it is you're trying to succeed at. But more than that, it's like to the next level, you need a little bit of obsession and you need to think of it as like your art. And if something's your art, then like you want to create something. And it means you're going to look at it from every perspective possible, you know?
And that's exactly what happened to me. Practice. Everything became a practice. It's not, you're not just doing it. You're not just working out. It's a practice. Like that's one of my favorite terminologies that like yoga uses. They talk, yoga practice. My lifting is a practice. My meditation is a practice. All of it. And that mindset just keeps you with that frame of mind of just like, I just need to get to the next step.
And I think what I particularly was so fascinated about by your story was that it wasn't just that you were learning to walk again and how to live a life with like an amputated leg, but also that like you went above and beyond and like became an athlete and you're training others and you're inspiring others, you know? And so you're also on the I'm gonna mess this up because I'm so not a sports girl, but I'm gonna try my best.
I'm really excited about what's about to happen. I don't even know what it is, but I'm really excited.
Am I wrong in saying that you're on like the Olympic?
Correct. You are wrong.
Okay,
No,
cool. So great. Okay.
I'm not
But
a
you do play hockey.
I dabble.
Okay.
I dabble. I played sled hockey. I played with the people that are Paralympians.
That's what it was. Thank
Yes,
you so
and
much.
yeah, so I've played on a team with a couple Paralympians, multiple time gold medal winners. I'm definitely not that
But
good.
you can be if you wanted to be.
Correct.
Right. Which is what's so cool about this stage in your life now.
I understand that like all I need is time. That's it. I simply need time and to decide yes, to vote for myself. That's it.
So I do want to take a moment because I think you told me that you don't usually talk about this in like previous podcasts, but anyone who's been listening this far along knows that I am a hopeless romantic. And I am a connoisseur of love stories. So, like every guest that I've had on, I like to talk about their love story. And so, I think what's so special about your story is that you guys met while you were still not knowing how you were going to get out of this pain, because you've been married for 6 years now.
Yes.
And so, that means that even though your surgery was 3 years ago, 6 years ago, you were still in the height of this. So, how did you guys meet? Tell the story, because I know it, but I want everyone else to hear.
Funny story, because I know you're going to enjoy this. Our anniversary is in 3 days.
Is it really?
Oh, this I knew that that was going to be the cherry on top.
Oh, this is so sweet.
Yeah. So obviously, like you mentioned, like I'm coaching adaptive athletes. I'm coaching able-bodied athletes as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been coaching for over a decade now. And I was coaching at a CrossFit gym in Belleville, Illinois. And so my wife, Hyann, she...
Can we just pause and say how like insane that was? That like you were going through this whole pain process and yet you were still doing CrossFit and like coaching it. Like that's insane.
It's what I knew. And I knew I could. And growing up, second oldest of 12 kids, you kind of always naturally are in a role of some level of teaching, coaching.
I love how you just said that so naturally. You're like, second oldest, 12 kids, you know, it's not
been,
a big deal.
It's been the reality of my life for just about every day.
Yeah.
I watched it happen.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get introduced to it all at once. I didn't all of a sudden have 12 brother or 11 siblings.
Well, yeah.
It tastes a little different at that point.
Yeah.
The things that I found normal. But yeah, so like... You're kind of just naturally like you get all the, I got all those reps in for coaching. I just found my medium and that was physicality. My medium was human movement. And that's what was fascinating to me, especially as I was losing function. I had to understand it better and better and better. So again, it became a place for me to A, help myself. Let's just be honest there, but then to use that and to use that for a greater purpose, which is really all anyone wants, right? You want to feel a higher purpose. Like you want a higher purpose to these conversations, even like you hope that somebody is going to listen to this and hear exactly what they need.
Yeah.
Like
maybe even come back another time and depending on what they're going through in their life, get something different from it.
Yep. There you go. So like I saw it like, so at a certain point, like I needed that too. I mean, I was in such a bad place that like I needed that purpose and that was very much it. And so I'm coaching at a CrossFit gym. My wife is from Brazil and she was an au pair for a military couple that for the first, so she was on a 2-year contract and for the first year and a half they were in Savannah, Georgia. For the last 6 months of her contract they had gotten moved to Scott Air Force Base, which is pretty close to where I lived in the gym. And the mom and her did CrossFit down in Georgia and they ended up picking our gym. It was literally just happened to be standing there the day she walked in, said, "Hey, we just moved here. We wanted to give this a try." We get them all set up.
It was serendipitous.
It worked. It worked. I think she was probably in the last 2 to 3 months that she was going to be here. And I will say this was 100% on her. She slid into my Instagram DMs.
Love that.
And then I was like, all right, I'm not going to be the coach that dates its clients. So like I responded, but I was like, I just assumed that it meant nothing or that she wasn't trying to spit any game. And I knew she was now I know she was really full of it whenever she said she wanted to go watch a boxing match that I was going to watch. Because that is just not her thing.
Right.
It was Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, August 26th. And she said that she wanted to go watch it with me. And I was like, come on over. And so that was literally how we started dating. And we're like, oh, okay, this can be nice and casual. You know, I feel nothing particularly good about where my life is going. And I know that I was like, cool, you know. There's no pressure here because she's going back to Brazil in 2 months. I knew within 10 days. Worst feeling, like best worst feeling ever. I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
You're like, this is my wife. God damn it.
Like, I just sat there like, I cannot believe that within 10 days, I am pretty confident that I actually want to marry this girl.
Well, I'm very confident in that you felt that way because this is just confirmation for my whole theory on life. Which is, I just think that like, the reason why I'm such a hopeless romantic is because in my family, there are so many couples that are just that Hollywood love story. Now, not to say that they don't have like struggles like every other normal couple, but there's that extra something special, which you understand because you've experienced, you know? And so it's like, it's just this aha moment where it's just this clarity where you know it's your person. And so I've always been told that like, you just, guys don't take that long. When it's the right person, it usually is pretty fast for them to figure out.
The relationship I was in before was a little over 2 years.
It's too long.
And it had over, and sorry. It was like we both overstayed the relationship by probably a year.
I mean, people get into a rhythm. Don't want to be lonely.
Most people need to have one of those mm-hmm. to understand what they're looking for.
Right.
And that really did pare down what I knew was and wasn't acceptable. I just didn't expect to find it from this girl who spoke English as a second language and said she never wanted to come to America when she was younger. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Life's funny like that.
It is. But like, and on top of that, I was like, I don't know that she feels this way.
That's scary.
I can't. She hasn't been home in 2 years. Mm-hmm. I cannot ask her this because that would have been much easier.
Yeah.
Because if we would have gotten married, the green card process, we wouldn't have had to go through the visa process. All of that would have just been kind of taken care of because she was already here. And I was like, I cannot ask her now. I have to ask her when she's in Brazil. And she's willing to choose to leave home.
Well, when she comes on to the episode, we're going to talk about episode her of side.
Bring her on out now.
Forget those of you who don't know, she's like right here. And every time you see us looking off camera, we're like looking at her.
Yeah. So like, I needed to feel that she had no pressure to say yes. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was going to be harder to say yes. And then I didn't expect the internet connection when I actually asked her, though, because that cut out and I had to ask her again.
No.
I asked her like 5 times, like, are you being serious or are you just trying to tell me, or are you just trying to be nice?
Oh. Meanwhile, your heart is just like dropping.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, and then. Obviously, she confirmed that she, A, did not hear me because the connection broke up mm-hmm. and that she did, in fact, want to come back to the country and that that was the only reason she'd be interested as well as pursuing.
Oh.
So we started the K-1 visa process, which is a fiance visa, probably within the month. And years later, it's complete.
But let's just pause and say, so within 10 days, you knew that you wanted to marry her. And how many months later did you get married?
Married was probably closer to a year. Engaged, though, was within 3 months of dating. Mm-hmm. Exactly something I was certain I would never do. I mean,
kind of like Jewish dating.
It's kind of like military dating. It's kind of like military dating, really.
Oh, maybe that all that background all kind of was like. Setting you right up for this moment right there.
There's gonna be someone that listens to this and is like, yep, I knew an E3 that got married 10 days after meeting a girl. She owns half his stuff and they don't see each other.
Oh, damn.
It's a really common military story.
Really?
Unfortunately, yes.
What a shame.
Yes.
But not your story.
Correct.
So cheers to that.
Right.
That's such a great story. That's the best. So
I like it.
But you guys, like in the first 3 years of your marriage, like I said, it was like right before this. I think it's so beautiful that like such a big life decision was something you made together.
Yeah. I mean, the truth of it is she had every reason to not want to stick around mm-hmm. and no good on the surface reasons too. Like clearly she saw potential that I couldn't, that I was just too cloudy.
Right.
I was in too much pain and too much of a fog to see that this could be a life or like something to stick around for, to be honest.
Right.
But
I think what's really special about your story, in addition to all the things that we've talked about so far, is that a lot of times relationships start off in the honeymoon phase where everything is going so well and so sweet and so lovely. But your relationship started with like chaos. Yes. Pain,
fire.
And like all the reasons why it shouldn't work.
She walked, yeah, she walked into a fire.
She did, but even when she went back, like trying to get her visa, like that's just, there's so many complications, but like you got past so much adversity to get to where you are right now that like that's just such an amazing foundation to have the beginning of your relationship.
You have to answer a lot of questions with action, plain and simple. And the truth is rarely expressed verbally. And that was what allowed things to move solidly, but early, is that we had to make a lot of action. We had to answer with action a lot. And there is no replacing that, for sure. You can't fake that.
Yeah. I just love your story. It makes me happy.
It's cool.
But
it's a lot more fun to tell now than a few years ago.
Oh, for sure. Because it's always easier to like look back and like say, this is how it all kind of came together. And
well, exactly. Like, I understand now like what I've been able to use.
Yeah.
That I've 1,000% been able to use what I've done and what I went through. I now know that it's not just the thing that killed me. It's the thing that I used to give me life.
What I think is so beautiful too is you had mentioned to me before the podcast was that what you get to do now with your life is you get to be the person who you always knew was there. You get to be who you always were. But like that pain was holding you back.
Yes, like very much. That is the objective. That is the guiding light. I don't think anyone realized how big of a dreamer I was when I was, say, like 10 years old. I was a very quiet, reserved, small kid. And I played small. I acted small.
Wow.
Treated small. All of it. But there was like that part of me that just like knew that I could be this and I could be that. And I was very capable of X. And that, you know, like I was 4'11", 95 pounds my first day of high school.
Whoa.
I was a small kid.
Yeah.
I always viewed myself as the capability of somebody much larger. Like I always really the only thing I wanted to be growing up was a professional, special baseball player, soccer player. Like I wanted to be a pro. And I wanted to be a pro, not just so I could play a game forever. Like it was little things like, I remember like I'd watch, you know, the games and they do the stuff at the intermissions and they'd show the players going to the children's hospitals and stuff like that. And I was like, I want to do that. That would be cool. That would be cool to be important enough to somebody that would matter.
Yeah. To have value.
And like, I'm now setting myself up that I could do these things. Like I'm not going to be a pro baseball player. I'm pretty comfortable with that reality at this point, nor do I even want to anymore. Mm-hmm. But like that mentality and that idea of how I treated myself and how I wanted to treat myself has come to fruition now. And so whether or not it is, you know, throwing the Scottish Highland Games, which is basically throwing trees and rocks in a field that no one cares about while I wear a kilt, or if it's learning to run and deciding, hey, I'm going to do these really long runs because I want to know what that's like, or I want to fight. Like I'm going to treat myself like a professional. And that expression to treat myself as my best, put myself in position to perform as my best, regardless of the scale, because I realize like I'm the one that gets to vote for how important that is.
Right.
Like one person may see me just taking an amateur fight. I don't care that it's an amateur fight. I get to decide how valuable and important and how serious I'm going to take that. And through that, I get to take all the benefits in direct correlation to the effort I put in.
I think it's amazing because it's so relatable to hear you say how like, not only like were you physically small, but you felt small. And I think that's more important. A lot of people, as adults even, feel so small. They have dreams. They have thoughts of what they want to do. But they just don't know how to get from point A to point B. And like you are a living inspiration, the fact that you're willing to go past that, right? Like you're willing to open yourself up. And it's so scary to do that. Everyone wants to be something.
Correct.
It's hard to do that though.
Yeah. I mean, it's the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step.
Mm-hmm. And failure is so much a part of that journey as
well. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, and that's what people don't want to do. They're like, I don't want to suck. I'm going to be amazing today.
Man, like that's, and it's such a bummer that that's been ingrained in us and that's been taught to us because that's what we were taught in school. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I was taught in school.
Yeah.
If you fail, you're a failure.
Right.
If you don't succeed right now, the rest of it's over.
Right. It's almost like it's a sign that you're not doing the right thing.
There's no coming back from failing this test.
Right.
Or for, you know, not, you know, you got a B instead of an A. No, sucks to suck.
Yeah.
You know, and, but the reality is that's just simply a piece of the puzzle. And I've sucked enough. You know, I spent, you know, and everybody else is like at their highest ego, highest self-thought, you know, early mid-20s. I got knocked, you know, I got my legs cut off, metaphorically at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, so I never had that phase. And, but that's, again, it's allowed me to really like be comfortable building from the ground up. It allowed me to be comfortable seeing a process through to the end, seeing a process through when you don't actually know what or if the end point is coming. The work has to be worth it, not the result. And like, you have to love the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to love the work because that was, in my mind, the only thing that would love me back, especially at that point in my life. Like, that was the only thing that would love me back. Like, eventually I will figure this thing out.
Right.
There can't be zero solutions out there. And I did. I found it. It took me 9 years. Like, that was a third of my life.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, like, relatively thinking, like, that was a third of my life was spent in that process.
But you found
in
it.
In that spiral. And the reality is, as much as I was scratched, clawed, and just flat out fought to keep my head above water, I kept sinking. I was sinking the whole time. I could have just put my hands down. And when I, like, that's what I got, that's what I get to take now. That's the prize I've earned. I'm sticking that process out for not giving up and giving in. And so, like I said, it becomes, now I don't care. Like they said, I signed up for this 30K trail race in Bryce Canyon, big elevation. And that is in May. When I signed up for it, I was yet to even run 4 miles. 30K is 19. I had yet to run 4 miles without stopping.
Wow.
Because I'm like, I know I have the time. And I really know that I'm going to get there if I put this money down.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it's just, it's amazing how much easier it is to make the second bet. You just got to get the first one done. Make that first bet on yourself. Like you said, you've never been an athlete, but you wanted to. So what have you done? You've made that bet on yourself. You're busy sucking at training.
Yeah. It's a snowball effect.
But it will grow.
Right. You just have to have that one win.
And as you get better, but like that will always be the hardest step for you to take.
Mm-hmm.
0 to 1 is so much harder than 1 to 2. And then at that point, now you have momentum.
It is true. I mean, even like, gosh, this story is so much more of a smaller scale than yours. It's not even funny. But like, even with this podcast, I had, you know, hired a videographer because I'm like, I want to take this seriously. I want to do this well. And he's like, okay, when are we starting?
You mean you want to treat yourself like a pro?
Right. Right. Exactly. Hey. Yeah. Okay. There you go. Hyping me up. Love it. So I was like, I remember just laying on this very carpet, Starfish, looking up at the sky, being like, I don't know how to use all this equipment. I don't know how to do any of this. Like, I had bought like different mics, a soundboard, like nothing was working out, but I just kept doing it. And like, since then, like, here we are. I didn't think I would be here. Like, this is so exciting for me. And the fact that I was like able to like reach out to you and bring you here, I think just anytime someone has a dream, it's not going to be as glamorous as like your vision is in terms of what it takes to get there. But the actual work and like really failing and fucking up and then getting up each time is so exciting. And you just keep building off those wins. And it's funny to look back on old challenges that were such a big deal. And now you're like, wow, that's my warm up, you know?
Yeah, like what used to seem wildly improbable, mm-hmm. you've been able to turn it into normal.
Yeah.
And now you know how to do that.
Yeah.
You thought the skill was learning how to set up a podcast. Skill was learning how to follow follow and stick with the process.
Yeah.
And now you can take that anywhere. And now as you get better at setting this stuff up, you don't need as much bandwidth here. So now you can apply those skills to something new.
Exactly.
Like I was I went camping this weekend, and one of the things that I like to do when I'm sitting out in the woods is I always bring a notepad and a pen, and I kind of wrote out some like, what are some of like, I like to define things. I do not like ill-defined obstacles.
Vague.
Like, you know, I'll do it when I'm ready. Okay, what does that mean? I hate that statement. I hate that statement. I do not accept it for myself. And if you're my friend, I'm probably going to walk you through that. Let's define what you mean by ready. So we can quit using imaginary markers that don't exist. And I realized that one of my big values in life and something that I want to always hold myself accountable to is I need to be able to fill in the blanks on these two sentences. I am currently and actively pursuing mastery in blank. I'm currently and actively learning as a white belt in blank. I need to be brand new at something, and I need to work on that thing that I've been working on for 10 years. I'm still working on my coaching. I'm still working on how I coach, the learning process, what I'm coaching, my methods, the processes, the ways to adjust and adapt to learning styles in different people. I've been doing that. I started that process in early 2010. I am still going full steam on that. But I'm at a point in that where it takes an exponentially disproportionate amount of work to make a little bit of progress in. And then I've also got things that I'm brand new in. Video editing, shooting. I'm a self-shot podcast, YouTube channel that my wife shoots a little bit for me. I'm learning to play disc golf. Like, I need to always and want to always be able to fill in those statements. And I know that if I cannot fill in the blanks on those two statements at all times, I am not centered. I'm not in alignment with the progress I'm trying to make. And I think that that's probably a pretty universal thing in terms of people being trying to be their best.
Isn't it amazing on that journey when you're learning that you also are unlearning a lot of things as well?
Twiddling a stick, twiddling it down.
Yeah, it's really cool. You know, the podcast that I was listening to just this morning with Arnold Schwarzenegger, he was saying how he feels really bad for kids these days because between video games and TikTok and Instagram and all that, they're not dreaming a lot anymore. They don't have time to just do nothing, to just visualize, to just think about who they want to become, because their minds are always so busy all the time that they don't have time to just,
You have to have that blank space.
yeah.
Have you read the book Comfort Crisis?
No, but I think I want to
Add it
now.
to add it to the list.
All right.
Michael Easter puts in a big section about how valuable it is to be bored and the lack of. He also just put out another book that I'd highly recommend as well called Scarcity Brain,
Ooh,
but
love.
I definitely think you should read Comfort Crisis first.
Okay. So before we wrap up, I actually just want to open up the opportunity to ask you if there's anything we can do to support you, any missions that you're working on right now, any goals or charities that you want people to support.
Yeah, I've got a couple things going on. So I'm going to start with me and then end with the nonprofit I work for. So
Perfect.
I am definitely like one of my big goals is I want to create the resources to improve the quality of life for other amputees. I've got this knowledge base that an understanding that I had before my amputation that served me very well. And while if I just use all that and I do all these athletic things, you know, I've got five world records in the Highland Games. I'm going to go run this 30K. My plan is to do bigger races. If I'm going to fight, like, yeah, that's cool. I'd rather it be useful. So right now I am working very hard on kind of doing my own social media thing. So like my personal Instagram page and my YouTube channel are two channels I'm trying to build up that are really about sharing like information, like movement type information, like actual nuts and bolts of life as an amputee. But then I'm also working to share like the lessons that I learned from pain and like these things that I got from walking those hard miles. I want to share as much of that as I can because again, I want that to be useful. I feel that that's what gives it that gives it so much more purpose. And so any support I can get through there it would be incredible, even if it's just a follow.
So if you can just tell everyone right now, and we'll put it on the screen.
Okay. So my Instagram handle is at Sam Schaefer1, SamSchaeferOne, and the number one. I know there's about 96 ways to spell Schaefer, and they all make sense. So, like, it's not hard to say, but it definitely always want to spell it out. And then at Sam Schaefer on YouTube, those are the two channels that I'm working on, just kind of trying to build up. And like I said, I'm trying to just spread information, spread, like I said, it's not just how to squat, it's how we think about things and trying to, and things that apply to a lot more than just losing your leg. So that's what I'm personally doing. And then I've been incredibly fortunate to start working with a nonprofit called Less Leg, More Heart.
Love
And
that.
we, one of the things that we do is our goal is to fill in the gaps, with the med with what the medical system is not currently providing for amputees post-surgery and pre-surgery. And so we've done home modifications. We've done just providing simple resources and supplies and helping people know where to go for information or for help. And one of our other big initiatives that I've been a part of is that we are working on donating running blades to amputees. They are incredibly difficult to get. So it's not uncommon for a prosthetic, like what I'm wearing right now, to for a price tag to be over $10,000. Insurance will typically cover your foot, and that foot cannot do a lot of very athletic things. It's very good for walking around, but it doesn't. You want to know how complicated the technology is in your feet? Look at how many feet I need to replicate this. So when now an amputee goes to get that second foot, they want that foot to be active to take care of their health. The insurance company almost always comes back and says, "Well, that's not medically necessary. We're not going to pay for that." But it's still priced for insurance. So these things become prohibitively expensive. So we work with a company called Levitate, who's completely going against all that, and they're making their running blade to be direct to consumer. They sell it at an affordable price point that we're so I so like I even have an account where I'm where I raise money, and if I raise $2,000, I get to pick an amputee and donate a running blade to an amputee.
That's amazing.
That's something I'm gonna want to be trying to do. Like as I go and do this run, I want to see if I can give away multiple running blades to amputees in the area,
That would be incredible.
and help them get a taste of what I've gotten to get back into my life. Because there comes a point for a lot of amputees, not every most amputees do not come enter this life like I did. They had a traumatic incident, and all of a sudden now they're here. I came in prepared and wanted it. Something like this can really turn the tide for them. And I'm incredibly passionate about the work that Less Leg, More Heart does. I've just got an immense amount of confidence in the woman running it, Tina Hurley. And any support you give to them is just as good as support is given to me.
Love that. All right, you guys, what are you waiting for? Like, you should have done this already, but if you haven't, we're gonna have it like popped up on the screen, but we'll also have it like linked below in the description. So either way, they'll be able to
Thank you so
find.
much.
Of course. It's like my that's the biggest thing. Like, we want to give back.
Right? Like,
And also, while we're at it, I do want to do like a PSA because like you mentioned earlier, you had that interaction where people, I'm sure, have said just come up to you, maybe meaning well, maybe just being total assholes, and like they just don't approach it properly. So, what is the best way for people out there? Because most people, I'm sure, are just ignorant. How should people like approach when they see someone who is like an amputated leg? What's respectful?
How would you treat anyone else?
I
They're
mean,
simply human beings with a different
I do want to say though that like you're assuming that most people are smart. No offense. If
background.
you're listening to this podcast, you are smart, but
Right. But for all the other dummies out there.
right, like let's spread it. What's like a good
If you're sitting
approach?
there and you're just dying to ask, make sure you are making no assumptions
About like the story and how it
about
happened.
anything. Make no, don't assume anything. And basically it's like, hey, if you don't mind, if you have time, I would love to maybe learn a little bit more because this is very curious and I realize I don't understand. And I think this is a better way to get information is from the source.
See, I knew you'd have the perfect way to say it. It's all,
Like
it's really all about like how you say it too. Tone is
it's
everything.
perspective. Like, are you trying to gain perspective or are you just trying to feel better about yourself?
That's right.
One of them is can help people, and the other one is being very rude to someone.
And which we know people do that. So we put it out there. There's no excuses. People need to know this now. There's a tradition that I have at the end of each episode where I like to say the Hebrew quote of why I'm doing this in the first place. So there is a Hebrew quote which is "Ezehu chacham, halomed mikol adam," which means one who is wise is one who learns from everyone. And we have learned so much from you, and people should go check you out because there's so much to you and your story, and you're constantly posting like amazing things. But if you can just impart a favorite quote or a life lesson that has impacted you that you want to share with the world. It's hard to pick one.
Man. Just one, huh? I think, man, there's. I'm gonna keep it simple. We already said it. The journey of 1,000 steps, or the journey of 1,000 miles, begins with one step.
Perfect.
And the encouragement there being like, don't be afraid to take that one step.
I love that.
Because there is always something waiting on the better side of the pursuit of progress.
Yes. Well said. Well
I was
done.
afraid that you'd be like, in our tradition, I'm going to make you say this Hebrew thing. I'm really glad
That upsets you.
that
No.
would have been.
My name is hard enough. I wouldn't start asking you to start saying like Hebrew. But thank you so much for coming. I really feel like I could for sure have you on again, and we can like cover other topics and conversations.
If I do my job right, the story's not going to get less cool.
This is true. So thank you for beginning the story with us. And this was so wonderful meeting you and like having you on my podcast. Thank you again, and thank you for sharing your story with all the listeners.
Thank you for having me, and this is a lot of fun, and it's very unique. This is not the first podcast I've done. This is by far, it is not, it's there's not a lot of overlap in this one. I appreciate that. That's fun.
Nice. Awesome. Love to hear that. That's great. So if you guys aren't already following me and this is your first time here, you can find me on Instagram and TikTok and X, previously Twitter, everywhere. I'm everywhere where you find podcasts. Jew from the Lou. Come follow me. Leave me a positive review, 5 stars, the whole spiel. Anyways, thank you guys for coming. I'll see you next time. Have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.